Welcome to episode 141 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Reducing Injuries from Falls in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Welcome to this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck, and I will be your host and guide information and resources that you're about to partake. We are going to be talking about this week reducing injuries from falls in nursing homes. Now, we've covered preventing falls, and we'll touch on that a little bit, preventing falls. We've done preventing falls in previous episodes, but we haven't really talked about if there is a fall, what are the interventions that can be done that reduces the likelihood that the injury will be bad. So we wanted to have a real expert on the show to talk about that. And that expert is Dr. Rain Tadiksar. And let me just say this, that I got his name right the first time I said it. I got an A+ from him. So I'm saying it right. I think he said it was Scandinavian, if I'm not mistaken. So Dr. Rain Tadiksar is the president of Fall Prevent LLC, a consulting company that provides educational, legal, and marketing services related to fall prevention in the elderly. Dr. Tadiksar is a gerontologist, just a healthcare professional who specializes in working with elderly patients, and a geriatric physician's assistant. He has been active in fall prevention for over 30 years. Dr. Tadiksar has authored several books on fall prevention, has directed numerous research projects on falls, and designed fall prevention programs in the community and institutional setting. And we are absolutely thrilled to have him on the show this week. Dr. Tadiksar, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here.
Great. So, I don't know, maybe a few weeks ago, I was looking through the internet, and I saw an article that I think that you had co-authored about falls in nursing homes and smart cell technology, and just kind of a broad understanding of injuries and risks of injuries from falls in nursing homes. And I was like, I got to have this person on the show. It was such a great article, and so I appreciate you coming on. We've had some episodes dealing with falls, but I kind of wanted to touch on it again because it's such an important topic. And quite frankly, a lot of our clients come to us because of injuries from falls, and I kind of want to better educate them. I want to better educate the community about the risk of falls and in a nursing home setting. So that's kind of the first question. We'll just start off with you know, the generalized question is, why, in your opinion, are falls so common in nursing homes?
Well, the reason that falls are so common, and when we say common, anywhere from 50% to 75% of a nursing home population will experience one or more falls per year. And one of the reasons that there's such a high prevalence of falls is because of the population. It's a very frail, vulnerable population. People have all sorts of chronic diseases, be it arthritis, Parkinson's disease, stroke, etc., which affects one's walking ability and affects one's balance. Also, a fair number of residents, up to 30 to 40%, have varying degrees of dementia. So these individuals may not be able to differentiate between safe and an unsafe environmental surroundings and can get into trouble that way. The other reason that falls are common is medications. Older people in nursing homes take an awful lot of medication. Sometimes any from 5 to 10 different kinds of medications. So you mix in chronic diseases, some dementia, medications with potential side effects, and that all comes together in the ingredients of causing falls.
Yes.
And I think the other aspect of falls is because, and we're probably going to address this, is with the injury issue, is that only maybe 10% of falls result in injury. And so it isn't that one fall results in injury right away, for instance, like a hip fracture, although sometimes that does occur. But often people have repeat falls before they have injury. So again, we can do something to prevent not only falls, but injury as well.
That's an interesting statistic. I don't think I've heard that before, that out of all the falls that occur, only 10% results in injury. Let me ask this then. We understand how the senior population and more specifically the nursing home population is vulnerable and susceptible to falls based on the different factors that you laid out, the medication, the prior history of falls, generalized weakness, that type of thing. What are some common ways in your experience that falls, knowing all that, how falls can be prevented?
Well, first of all, what the facilities have to do is that they have to identify which residents are at risk for falls. So clearly, some of the risk factors are, which we have gone over already, is people who have poor mobility, difficulty with walking, they have balance impairment, they have mental status or cognitive problems as well. People who have urinary incontinence. And one of the reasons that urinary incontinence is a risk factor is because when older people have the urge to urinate, it's only a short time before they can get to the bathroom. So often they hurry to the bathroom. And in doing so, they exceed their safe ability to get to the bathroom. So I think one of the most important things facilities can do is to identify who is at risk for falling. Once you have done that, then what you do is you take these risk factors and you refer them to various professionals within the facility. So, for instance, if a person has difficulty with walking or balance, that should go a referral to the resident's physician to find out what is the underlying diseases or the problems responsible for that. And can we manage that? Can we reverse the problem with walking or balance? And if we can't, then people need to be referred to occupational therapy and physical therapy for exercises that can help in terms of maintaining their walking and balance. So those are some of the things that we can do to prevent falls. It's in terms of most important.
I think that's a really interesting point, and I think that that's something that often the family misses, but sometimes some of the staff misses, is that concept of the need to go causes the individual that shouldn't be walking to get up and try to locate the bathroom, and that's when the fall happens. So from a holistic approach of trying to prevent these falls, it's good to understand, okay, well, these falls seem to be happening between, 10 p.m. and midnight. And, oh, well, maybe that's why, is because they're trying to go to the bathroom. And so maybe we should do our rounding at about that time and take them to the bathroom. So something like that is a good intervention that's, not that difficult to understand, is that they got to go to the bathroom. But I think that that's something that the family often misses.
Yeah, and just to sidebar on that is another fall prevention is to inform family members, loved ones, what the risk factors for individual residents are. So therefore now the family, particularly if they're visiting often, they become the eyes and the ears of the nursing staff. So if they can detect a difference in their loved ones in terms of how they're behaving, how they're walking, how their balance is, etc., they can go to the nurses and say, look, something's not right with my mom or dad. Can you take a look? So that's another important intervention.
Right. So with regard to interventions that are, common to prevent falls, what are some of the, are there some that are seem to work more than others? I know that in the past, in order to keep somebody from falling from the bed, people used rails, which studies have shown and experience has shown that's almost always never a good idea, due to the strangulation and choking hazards and the associated hazards that go with that. But what are some of the more, ways to prevent falls that are better, seem to work more than others, in other words?
Well, I think if you take a, you have to take a look at any facility, you have to look at where do most of our falls occur. And generally they occur in two places, in terms of the bedroom, getting out of the bed, and then the bathroom. So in terms of the bed, and you're absolutely right, side rails do not prevent falls. As a matter of fact, studies have shown repeatedly that they cause more problems in terms of people getting out of bed and they fall from higher elevations, et cetera, et cetera. So what can be done for individuals who have a problem with bed falls is, again, refer to the physician, make sure you have looked at all underlying causes for that person's mobility problems of getting out of bed. Then what you want to do is you want to give a person a bed, like a low bed, that they are able to easily get out of, and use maybe a half side rail, not to prohibit the person from getting out of bed, but enabling the person to use that half side rail as a balance support when they're getting out of bed.
Right. So,
and then,
not to interrupt you, but so to paint the picture for the person at home listening, that kind of half rail, is that towards the head of the bed or towards the legs of the bed, in other words, so that's just there for support and not restraint, essentially?
It can be either way. Generally, it's the head of the bed. But what I often do in terms of training nursing home staff and everything like that, if you're going to use a half side rail as an enabler, please observe the person using that. And sometimes people are better off with the half side rail at the head or at the bottom. And it depends if they're right-handed, left-handed. I mean, there's a lot of factors involved in that.
Right.
But whenever you have an intervention like that, you want to observe if the person is able to use it safely.
Exactly.
Because if they're not, then it's not a good intervention.
Right. And I kind of cut you off. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing is, so you have the bed, the low bed, you have the half side rails and enabler and everything like that. And then the most important thing to determine is, why is the individual getting out of bed? You know, are they getting out of bed because of the need for nutrition, for hydration, for exercise? Often people are getting out of bed to go to the bathroom. Well, if a person has frequency going to the bathroom and they have poor balance, and poor walking, you know, perhaps that you could use a bedside commode there next to the bed instead of having the person go all the way to the bathroom.
Exactly.
And then the other intervention is to use alarms as well to let the staff know when people are getting out of bed, when they shouldn't be getting out of bed by themselves. And also that nursing can do rounds every 15 minutes, half hour, every hour to make sure that the individuals who are at risk for bed falls, you know, are safe.
I feel like with the personal alarms or the bed alarms, I think it's kind of like on one hand, it alerts the nursing staff that this individual has gotten up and perhaps they can go do something if they're able to literally at that moment. On the other hand, you have the idea that oftentimes that alarm that goes off acts as a restraint in itself because the person hears the alarm and just sits back down. And that's, you know, maybe not something that we want to do in that nursing home is prevent people from moving around if they want to move around. I see both. A lot of times people argue on either side of that issue of the alarms.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point. I think alarms, first of all, fall alarms, they do not prevent falls, but they just alert nurses that residents are participating in an activity, a dangerous, unsafe activity by themselves, which they shouldn't be doing. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes the sounding of alarms can be very loud and, in essence, prohibits individuals from moving about. And that in those instances, they are a restraint. Now, companies have been very clever because what you can do with these alarms is silence them in the room and have them go off at the nursing station or with a pager that the nurse carries around. So therefore, the noise does not create a problem.
Right.
But again, you have to individualize all your interventions. Even with fall alarms, you have to individualize. There's all sorts of different types of fall alarms, and each one can be targeted to individual problems.
That's right. And again, to reference this article, which is a fantastic article, and I'll put it in the show notes and have it on the screen if people want to see it. But you talk about not just preventing falls, but reducing the injury sustained from the falls. That 10% in which someone's injured, we're trying to reduce that number. And one of the aspects you talk about is carpeted flooring. Can you kind of unpack whether or not carpeted flooring is an advantage or disadvantage when it comes to reducing injury? Not reducing the likelihood of fall, but reducing the injury from falls.
Well, carpeting, every intervention you have has risks and benefits involved. And carpeting is very good because you have some kind of absorptive padding there. So there, if you fall, there's some kind of absorption that occurs, and there's reduced injury. On the other hand, individuals with a nursing home tend to walk with what's known as decreased steppage height, which means that they don't lift their feet as readily as they do. So people who have Parkinson's disease, people who have stroke, people who have arthritis of the knees, they don't lift their feet up when they walk that much, and they tend to shuffle when they walk. Shuffling and carpets can lead to trips. The other thing is walkers can be difficult to use on carpets depending on the diameter of the wheels. Same thing, canes can be difficult as well. You can sometimes get the tip of the cane caught in pile carpeting. Wheelchairs are difficult to maneuver in different kinds of carpeting as well. So there's the advantage of carpeting in terms of reducing injury, but also it can increase the risk of injury as well, of falls and possible injury as well. So again, you have to target any intervention, even environmental things like carpeting, with the population that you're serving.
Right. That makes sense. Can you kind of talk about vinyl flooring? Like, I guess that's would probably be bad under any circumstance, I guess.
Well, vinyl now, if you have people who have this shuffling gait and everything like that, it's much easier to walk. It's much easier for walkers to get across vinyl flooring. Same thing with wheelchairs. On the other hand, as you say, if you fall on vinyl linoleum flooring, there's a greater risk of injury, and studies have shown that. The other problem that occurs with vinyl flooring, if there's any spillage of fluids, if it's water, juice, or even urine, that becomes a wet hazard that can lead to slips in older individuals. Where with carpeting, if you spill something, any kind of fluids, that's okay. It just stains, and you can generally remove those stains.
Can you speak to the pros and cons of some of these injury reducing interventions that you have on your on this paper, and one of them being hip protectors? I think that a lot of people or many people don't know about hip protectors in general. So can you kind of unpack how they're used, the benefits, and the possible risks?
Yeah, hip protectors interesting. Hip protectors are used to prevent hip fractures from occurring, and hip fractures can occur in both men and women. And of course, because of osteoporosis, they're much more common in older women. But there were people, you know, maybe 20 years ago, we noticed that older individuals in the wintertime, when they slipped and fell, they didn't really hurt themselves or they didn't fracture their hips because they were wearing overcoats that went down below the hip. So somebody very clever said, geez, why don't we just take that concept and develop these protectors that you wear around both hips? It's like almost like a girdle, a woman's girdle that one would have. Of course, it's much more aesthetic and pleasing.
I think
so.
Studies have shown that
hip protectors do prevent hip fractures from occurring, but the big problem is non-compliance. Is that older people don't like wearing them, particularly those individuals who have problems with urinary frequency, and they have to go often to the bathroom back and forth. Also, for women who are still very much aware of how they look in terms of appearance, Some hip protectors make older women look very bulky and that. So therefore, the compliance with hip fractures, I mean, with hip protectors, is problematic.
Right. I was going to say that from my days of playing football when I was a kid in junior high, that was part of the thing. It was a girdle that you fastened two pads to your hips. So I
yep, it's the same concept. Yeah. Absolute same concept.
Yeah. What about the concept of either having a low bed or having the mattress on the floor to reduce the injuries from falls? Can you speak to the pros and cons of that?
Well, a low bed does prevent injuries from occurring because you're only falling a short distance. So therefore, generally, people will roll out of bed and they might have some scrapes or lacerations at their knees and elbows. But that's the extent of that injury. Now, mats, again, prevent injury from occurring because they're absorptive pads alongside the bed. The only problem with mats is that some mats, not all mats are created equal, let me say that. Some mats actually lead to balance instability in terms of individuals who are standing on the mats because of the soft give that they have. Other mats, basically, they work for a while, and then the absorptive ability no longer works, so you have to replace the mat. Then it's difficult to sometimes for staff to do what they have to do in terms of bed care with the mat in place, so they remove the bed mat, but they don't put the bed mat back again alongside the bed. So there's all sorts of individual problems with bed mats.
That makes sense. Let's kind of delve into this topic, but in terms of reducing injury from falls, what is a smart cell?
A smart cell is a, this is put out by a company called SafeTech, and what they did with a smart cell, it's pretty clever stuff, is that the flooring has shock absorptive properties, very similar to a floor mat. So therefore, if you drop onto the floor, it softens the impact of the fall. At the same time, when people are walking on it, it maintains its rigidity as a normal floor. And that's basically what it is. So during walking conditions, there's no problem. It acts like a regular floor, like a regular linoleum or wooden floor. But if a person falls onto it, it softens and absorbs the impact of the individual.
Is that the concept? And this is me, I guess, thinking of action movies. But is that not the concept behind Kevlar, where it has to do with the amount of force that's applied to it, and how quickly the force is applied to it is how protective it gets, or how rigid it gets? Did I make that up?
Yeah, very, very similar concept, very similar.
Okay. I feel like so a smart cell is going to kind of reduce the disadvantages of a normal mat in terms of rolling around in a wheelchair or the people that have the difficulty with the stepping due to arthritis and things like that. But it makes up for it in the fact that it's stronger when the person falls on it. It's or softer, I should say.
That's right.
Okay. What's your understanding as to why, the smart cell isn't something that's a little bit more common, or is it common nowadays?
Well, I don't know how common it is. When I wrote the article and everything, I had a lot of conversations in terms of the research the company was doing and everything like that. And I was waiting for studies to be produced, from there. And I'm not sure if the studies were ever done and such like that. But I think that one of the reasons that it's not widely used, even though it's effective, is first of all money in terms of the expense of it. It's not cheap. And so, therefore, what I often recommend to individuals who are interested in this whole smart cell technology is basically try to target where you would like to use the smart cell. Do you want to use it then alongside the bed just by itself? And so you can have the smart cell actually underneath the regular tiles. And also, the company now also produces a smart cell mat that you can have there as well.
Right.
Or do you want to put the smart cells in the bathroom by the toilet or by the shower area where a lot of injuries occur as well? So it's a matter of looking at your population and what is the prevalence of injury or the amount of injury that occurs. Where does the injury occur, and then targeting the smart cell to those areas?
I think that if I can catch what you're throwing down, the overarching theme is that there needs to be a holistic approach to the individual's care from all angles. Finding out why they're wandering, if they're wandering, take every intervention that's possible, weigh the advantages and disadvantages, and try to prevent the falls that way, as opposed to maybe like, well, we got smart cells, so now we don't have to worry about, our rounding schedule for her getting up and going to the bathroom, that kind of thing. It's really it's one piece of a puzzle to prevent those falls.
Right. You have to individualize. That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Tadiksar, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about fall prevention, injury prevention in nursing homes, because like I said at the top of the show, we deal with this a lot. We get a lot of calls about this. So as much information as we can put out there, the better. And we really appreciate you coming on, because we know you've authored a lot of articles and publications about fall prevention. So we appreciate your experience and you sharing that with us.
Okay. It's been my pleasure. All thank right. you.
Thank you. Dr. Tadiksar is a leader in fall prevention. He's written all kinds of articles and books on it, and I'm so happy that we were able to get him onto the show. I really recommend that everybody goes out and reads the article that we were quoting from. I'll put that on the screen and in the show notes, so you can check that out. But just as an FYI, this week, I think Friday, the 21st of February, is National Caregiver Day. So that, I believe, is a category for anybody that provides care. You got your nurses, your CNAs, all kinds of people. So give them a hug. And I think with that, we're going to conclude this episode. You can catch new episodes every other week, two times a month, bi-monthly, dual monthly, duo monthly. Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, either on YouTube or on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or you can check us out wherever you get your podcasts from. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.